What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance. He covers the team for The Athletic as well. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and it is today. It's going down, the first round of the NHL draft. And by the way, our draft...
Okay, Kesha. Is it going down?
Yes.
Are you yelling timber?
I am yelling timber. Wow. Absolutely. Our draft coverage on Sportsnet 650 brought to you by the Vancouver Giants. It's never too early to get your Vancouver Giants season tickets. Tickets start at under $19 at vancouvergiants.com/season tickets.
Would you say that the NHL draft is a night we might remember?
We'll see.
Okay.
I think one way or another we will.
Yeah.
I do think, and, you know, there's a lot to dig into, right? Both on draft stuff, whether the Canucks will make the 15th overall pick or not, extensions for some of their players, targets they could be interested in. There's a lot to dig into. We'll have Dimitri on at 1:30, but other than that, it's just going to be us trying to kind of sort through everything. The dynamic I can't get out of my head is just, like, the incredibly high-pressure, high-urgency situation it seems like the Canucks find themselves in with regard to the 15th overall pick. Like, I can't remember another time where it wasn't just this team is open to moving their pick, but like there's a level of it's going to be devastating if we make this pick. It's going to be like really upsetting if we make this pick.
And then that's, I would say that's how the public feels about it more than the team.
Sure.
I think the way that I would frame it is the Canucks are still using the 15th overall pick in shopping for a centerman.
Right.
They'll probably be pretty happy to see Noah Dobson move for a futures-based package, right? Because that's the sort of package that teams have been reluctant to accept for players on the market. Harder to pry players, like active NHL contributors, out of other teams' hands with futures and draft picks than it has been in previous years. That's been the roadblock that Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford have been navigating here. They're definitely open to moving the pick. They are still working on it. I would say it's more like a clear preference is to try and get the center, which is obviously getting harder and harder. And, you know, you can go read this at The Athletic if you'd like, where me and Rick Dhaliwal have put aside our squabbles for long enough to drop a new piece.
Just barely long enough.
Everything we're hearing ahead of the draft in terms of the extension news and some free agent target updates and some other stuff. And, you know, one thing we note at length in that piece is that asking around to our best team sources, the Canucks themselves as of last night, despite reporting that they might have been close to something, didn't have a good sense or a good read on precisely what to expect today. Right? There's still uncertainty, at least as of last night. Maybe things have changed now. A lot can happen in an hour, much less 12.
Yep.
At this time of year. But as of last night, the Canucks didn't have a good sense or a good read on precisely what'll happen, and found it difficult to tell, because teams just weren't moving players for futures the way they did in previous years. There was a sense that this could yet go either way. And so the club is prepared to draft at 15th. And they're prepared, while their preference is to strengthen down the middle. But there remains a comfort level with Hedl as the second line center. And the team might then move their focus a little further down the lineup and target a third line center. There's an openness to a variety of different options. And this is also why I think the door is still open a sliver of a crack on Pew Suter.
Yep.
It's why, you know, I expect the Canucks to check in on Mikael Granlund if they make it to July 1 without having landed the center of their dreams, the center that they've been hunting for here. It's why I'm still going to be like closely monitoring guys like Jack Roslovic, guys like Nick Bjugstad, players that can bring some size, ideally a right-handed face-off ability down lineup. So preference is to get a clear top six guy. Club will move the 15th overall pick if the right deal presents itself. Certainly our focus should be and is on Marco Rossi on this score. But there's other names. Matthew Barzal's been talked about now.
Yep.
David Pignata of the fourth period, dropping that as a player linked to the Canucks and the Utah Hockey Club, which is, so if Utah's involved, because they have the fourth overall pick,
yes.
They have the James Hoggins piece.
Well, and that's like, yeah, if you want to draft Hoggins, boom, done right now. There you go. You don't even have to. I mean, they got 16 and 17 from Montreal. We'll talk about that in a second.
And they could do like Nick Schmaltz and fourth overall.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Or for Barzal and one of those teen picks in the teens. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then the Islanders also get a top six player, and the Utah Hockey Club come away with the fastest, scariest top six forward group in the league. Pretty nasty.
Mm-hmm.
Paterka, Barzal, Gunther, Cooley.
Cooley. Keller.
And my guy, Barrett Hayton. What? Why are you laughing?
I didn't know he'd been elevated to your guy status.
Oh, absolutely.
There you go.
I don't think people understand what's happened to Barrett Hayton. We can talk about that another day. It's a good thing, though. Like, he's become really good.
Yes.
So that's sort of where we sit. It's a very unpredictable day for the Canucks, and I think they feel that way, too. So they'll be turning over every rock here, and we'll see if something shakes loose, hopefully while we're on the air. Because that would be fun to break down.
That would be great. Yeah. And I do wonder, kind of big picture, and obviously the Canucks are a major part of this, but just zooming out and looking at the lay of the land across the league as well. I'm curious to see if one of the themes of today, the next, 5 hours here before picks actually start getting made in the first round of the draft, and of course you can get full coverage, Sportsnet TV, and also here on Sportsnet 650 of the draft. I'm wondering if one of the themes of the day is going to be teams retreating or bending on their no players for futures stance. And I think you can already see the cracks forming in that, right? And even I'd go to the J.J. Paterka deal. Those weren't pure futures. Those are guys that can slot into Buffalo's lineup right now, Kesselring and Doan. But it also wasn't like, well, we'd only trade him for a better player. We'd only trade him for someone of a player who's just as good as J.J. Paterka. They had to back away from that stance. Noah Dobson goes for futures. Yeah, Emil Heinemann's in the deal, but two first-round picks. Now, maybe a bit of a different circumstance for the New York Islanders, because we do get the sense they're very, very motivated to, one, keep the first overall pick, but also find a way to move back up into the top 10 or even higher to go get the local kid James Hoggins as well. So maybe that changes the math for them, but I just don't know. And again, if this really comes down more than anything to the players that have some, so where the team itself has some sort of motivation to deal with them. And Noah Dobson, he needed a new contract. And maybe the Islanders didn't want to give him the 8-year, $9.5 million deal that he ended up getting from Montreal. So they could sit there and say, well, we don't want to move him for futures all they want. But if you don't want to give him his next contract, you got to figure out a solution to it. And that continues to be where I think the Minnesota Wild are with Marco Rossi as well. It's great that you don't want to do it, but he's open to an offer sheet that's probably going to get you a first and a third in like a few days. So he might not want futures, but there's a good chance you're going to have to take back a package largely built around futures.
Yeah.
And I think I wonder how much we see across the league of teams bending on that stance and saying, you know what, we didn't want to do it, but we're going to have to kind of bite the bullet because the problem we have with this player is forcing our hand and we just got to do a deal here.
Yeah. And look, I haven't heard that what Satyar Shah reported a little bit earlier today, much of the trade interest in the Canucks pick is dependent on who will be available at 15. But there is like a general rule with draft day trades that your pick might not be any more valuable than it is when you're actually on the clock. Like that is often a really good moment where interest spikes and things get frenzied and teams are making decisions on a timeline and options are expiring, right? And
that also, reading that tweet from Sad, and again, maybe I'm just like have like Marco Rossi fixation or something here, but like my first thought was that sounds like part of an incredible like face-saving maneuver by Minnesota, right? Where it's like, well, look, we weren't interested in futures. But then we weren't expecting this player to still be on the board at 15. And when he was there, it's like, wow, we forced our hand. We had no choice but to go get that pick. That kind of thing, right?
Well, and look, then the New York Islanders are now a team to watch because they've acquired Emil Heinemann, which means that Emil Heinemann is available for trade.
Yeah.
Have you been tracking this proto Mike Sillinger?
If not, no.
So he went from Florida to Calgary in the Bennett trade.
Yep.
Calgary to Montreal in the Tyler Toffoli trade, and now he's brought Dobson to Montreal.
But he's only played in Montreal.
Correct.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying he's this classic prospect who like seems to be holding value despite the fact that teams also continue to view him as expendable.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
By the way, how about Justin Sortif? Second round plus?
Yeah, he's good, man.
He's good, but that's typically not what the about to be waiver eligible AHL forward good prospect goes for. I don't know. I don't want to rip the guy. Like, his local product, played for the Giants, all that. He's a good prospect. It was just a little bit surprising to see that much.
Well, he's a really strong skater, man. And, you know, he's 6 foot, he's 185 pounds, and the Washington Capitals are really aggressive about promoting high-end American League players into their lineup. I mean, that's Protas, that's McMichael, that's mm-hmm. Hendricks LaPierre next year. And I guess they saw something they liked in Sortif. You know, the Canucks had taken Joni Yermo, swung big on Joni Yermo with Sortif still on the board. Sortif was the most obvious pick possible, given that he'd had, you know, 34 points in 22 games as a draft-eligible skater for the Vancouver Giants in that, you know, weird WHL bubble up in Kamloops. I was pretty critical of that pick at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, what, 4 years later, he returns a second and a sixth. Good work by Florida.
Absolutely.
I totally get the bet, though, from the Washington Capitals, right? The, you know, cap's going up. It's going to be hard to sort of land these kinds of guys. And the Capitals are very clearly and very aggressively trying to sort of volume shoot at an affordable pipeline of talent coming up and in, especially because they've got a lot of money invested in older guys who are slowing down. And so, you know, I mean, do you really want to bet against Capitals pro scouting here?
No, not necessarily.
I think this is also just where the market's going. Remember the reaction to the Gensel trade from Pittsburgh to Carolina?
Yep.
A few years ago, where it was like, oh, where's the firsts? And now every trade feels that way.
Yes.
But, you know, this is like the natural extension of Doan and Kesselring returning Paterka, right? This is where we're at, where young NHL-capable talent, especially if it's cost-controlled, is at a massive premium on the trade market right now.
So we've talked a lot about Marco Rossi, obviously, and I'm sure we'll have opportunity to do more of that on the show today. But I did want to touch on a couple of other players that have been linked to the Canucks. And, you know, first and foremost, and I don't know that you and I have spent a ton of time talking about what this would look like and the logic behind it, but Bowen Byram's name continues to be connected to the Canucks. I know Frank Saravalli reported it on Halford and Brough this morning. I can't recall if it was in your piece with Dahlia. It was. So this is a real thing, right? There's been a lot of smoke to this, a lot of noise around it, and we just continue to hear it as we get closer to the draft. And I think everyone's almost the universal reaction when we started hearing this and as we continue to hear it.
Can I explain what the universal reaction is?
Please.
Huh?
Well, it's like, well, we all like Bowen Byram, right? We all like Bowen Byram, Vancouver or BC kid, Vancouver Giant, like was a stud for the Vancouver Giants.
Oh, yeah.
So everyone's
it's not a reflection of his skill.
No. Everyone's like, well, that's interesting, but hold on a second. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, Bowen Byram. Huh? But wait. If there's one, I hear people say, like, well, the blue line is really set for the Canucks. That's true to an extent. The left side of the blue line, in particular, is deep for the Vancouver Canucks. And that's where Bowen Byram plays. So from the perspective of, hey, there's a talented player, a talented young player with upside that, as we hear, wants to play for your team, I get that. I completely understand that. It's difficult for me not only to see the hockey fit if he were to become a Vancouver Canuck, it's also difficult for me to see what they're sending back that Buffalo would be really interested in. Buffalo's one of these teams that has continually said, we're not interested in futures. Now, Bowen Byram might be one of those players as well where they just figure they have to move on, so they have to kind of take what they can get. He is an RFA, so that's always going to at least put that dynamic in play, that you kind of just have to deal with it and send the player somewhere else. I don't know. Like, it 15th overall and what? What would be of interest for the Buffalo Sabres? But I also think
I don't think you're paying more than...
you think just 15 overall?
I think we're talking Trevor Zegras of defenseman.
I think really? I don't think his value has fallen that far.
I would probably look at that as the comparable.
What was that? That wasn't even a first, was it?
It was a second. Yeah. It was an active NHL player in Ryan Poehling, and it was a fourth. No, I think
I don't know, man. He played all 82 last year. Like,
played all 82 and had 40 points, but his defensive game was not good, right? He is left-handed. He's out of contract as an RFA, do a $4.7 million qualifying offer with arbitration rights, and he's got significant injury risk into his profile.
You have to be willing to pay him if you're going
to
be doing
it. You have to be willing to pay him, and you have to be willing to pay him in a situation where the leverage is his coming off of a really successful season.
Yeah.
And you have to swallow a really significant injury risk. We're only 2 years removed from a very different conversation taking place around Bowen Byram. I like the bet, by the way, for the Canucks. I'm not saying this to criticize a player that I think would be an excellent pickup for the Vancouver Canucks for a variety of reasons. Among them, by the way, that I think having a surplus is a very good thing when you can manage it, right? Like the fact that the Utah Hockey Club was positioned to just be like, yeah, Kesselring, whatever, we have Duda and Simashev coming, we're fine. That's a flex. You know, like that's where you want to be.
Sure.
Right? Because that opens up a ton of doors for you. So I'm on board, generally speaking, and like Byram a lot as a player. But it's not a shock to me to hear, like Friedman was reporting it on 32 Thoughts, right? That the market's softer for Byram than expected.
Interesting.
And so then that's not a surprise to me. The contract status is complicated. The defensive game was poor, although some of that could be environment in Buffalo nonetheless. And, you know, there's significant injury question marks that have, you know, surrounded Byram dating back to his junior career. Which, you know, we all hope that he's put behind him and he's played a lot of games, 150 plus across the last two seasons. So that's a very good sign. You hope that that's a sign of things to come for a long time for him because he's an enormously talented player and we're very invested in the success of players trained in the lower mainland.
Yep.
Even if he is from Cranbrook originally in this market.
Oh, whatever. It's still BC.
Yeah, no, I know. But I'm just saying.
What do you got against Cranbrook?
Nothing.
Even if he's from Cranbrook.
I was explaining, I was like claiming him as more local than that.
I see
what I'm saying?
Even which is, more local, yeah.
Which is not fair of me, so I wanted to give a shout out to Cranbrook. I just framed it negatively because that's what I do.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
My bad.
I love the Coonies.
Me too.
Coonies rock. Oh, anyways.
Cranbrook rocks. I'm a huge fan. And long history of producing excellent defensemen.
So true.
So nonetheless, I've gotten off topic. I can understand why Byram would be like, I think there's a real chance that Byram's value on a like value pecking order or a value chart falls closer to Zegras than to Paterka.
All right. That's interesting. I mean, if that's the case, like if it is significantly less than like I would think at first blush, and I think a lot of people would think at first blush, that makes it all the more interesting. It's still hard to see the fit, but, and this kind of bridges us between the trade talk and what they might do with the 15th overall pick and some of the contract extension chatter that's been out there over the last 24 hours or so around the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, this was part of the Evander Kane deal as well, right? Evander Kane, in more than words, wanted to come play in Vancouver. Him and his agent exercised the leverage that they had to make it so that, yeah, there's some other teams involved, but we want to get to Vancouver. We want to be a Vancouver Canuck. We're hearing that Connor Garland might be signing a 6x6 extension to sign with the Vancouver Canucks, to remain with the Vancouver Canucks when he's eligible to do so on July 1st.
Officially, my team sources keep saying that they're working on it, but all indications are that that one's very positive and should get done in short order.
Numbers are out there, and I was listening to Frank Saravalli's hit with Alfred and Bruff, and he was like, well, you know, I never want to say it's going to be this for sure because he can't sign it for a few days. And then 5 minutes later, he was like, by the way, I just got a text saying it's definitely 6x6. So the number is extremely out there right now.
Originally reported by Dollar.
By the way, we do have a trade breaking right now in the NHL. Pierre LeBrun saying that the Columbus Blue Jackets are trading for Charlie Coyle from Colorado. Ooh. So another potential center on the move, or potential center target for the Vancouver Canucks on the move, this time from Colorado to Columbus.
A player that I do think the Canucks had real interest in. I'll be fascinated.
Yeah, he's a center that a team was considering trading. They had real interest in him.
Correct. But dating back to when he was in Boston even, I'll be fascinated to see what Columbus has paid here. Last year he didn't have a lot of time to get running. in terms of Dan Waddell. So their new GM, Don Waddell.
Don Waddell.
So I'll be fascinated to see how he puts this his stamp on this team. And a little nervous for it, to be totally honest with you, because this Blue Jackets team has built up an absolute arsenal of assets. And Coyle's got 1 year left on his deal. He's like very much a middle six type. I like him better on the wing than at center. Now, I also love the idea of them having, like, we'll see what's involved here. But you, if you have Marchenko, Voronkov, Fantilli, you know, you add Coyle into that mix with Boone Jenner and company, I mean, that's like a lot of really fast, big players. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, not just... So you hope that in this case, it's going to be something like Cole Sillinger as opposed to...
That's a lot of centers too, right? Like, you didn't even list Sean Monahan in there.
No. Because I was specifically listing the big
fast guys. Fast but just guys. Like the center depth chart, depending on what's going back the other way, is pretty crowded in Columbus all of a sudden.
Yeah, my gut would be Sillinger.
Yep.
That just feels like the... Because they also have this other kid, this... you're going to think I'm making it up, but I'm not. His name's Luca Delbel-Velouz.
No, we all know Luca Delbel-Velouz, of course. Okay. But all-name guys.
But not just an all-name guy. Like, absolutely tracking to be a horse third-line type center, right? Mm-hmm. So they even have more guys coming. So, yeah, I'm curious to see this one. My gut is... Cole Sillinger has been the asset most out there for them. So that would be my expectation here. But yeah, Coyle going out, I think, is another one that does complicate the path for Vancouver in general.
I think the return is going to be fascinating here. We've heard that Columbus was in on Dobson, who ends up going from the Islanders to Montreal. And if you're just joining us, that was pick 16 and 17 in this year's draft. And Emil Heinemann going from Montreal to the Islanders to complete that deal. So we've heard that Columbus was heavily in on Noah Dobson, and they felt they made a better offer than what Montreal did and weren't able to land the player. We've also heard Don Waddell kind of very publicly opine about just how unwilling other teams are to take back futures and how it's completely out of step with what he's generally seen in his tenure and his career as an NHL executive. I'm going to be fascinated to see what the return was here, right? Do we continue to see what I've kind of read as early signs of the selling teams breaking a little bit, of the selling teams kind of saying, you know what, we're now 5 hours out from the draft. We were hoping these non-future deals were going to materialize and they didn't, so we got to start doing something else. Or is it going to be that Colorado held the line and Columbus decided they had to do it anyway? So I'm going to be fascinated to see what this is. I think it's going to, one, it takes a center target off the market from the Vancouver Canucks perspective, but I think it's also potentially going to tell us an awful lot what to expect for other center trades coming down here in the next few hours.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really fascinated to see what the price paid here. And, you know, I do look at this as a big, fast team getting bigger and faster in the Eastern Conference. I really struggle, given the quality of the Metro, I really struggle to understand how Columbus isn't a playoff team next year, provided they get even average goaltending, especially because Dean Evason's like a legitimately good coach.
Yeah. All right. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Latest breaking news in the NHL. Colorado Avalanche trading Charlie Coyle to the Columbus Blue Jackets. That's per Pierre LeBrun. Haven't seen what the return is just yet, but we'll keep an eye out for that. We will take a break here. Continue to send your texts and questions in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We really just mentioned the Connor Garland extension, but I do think there's an interesting dynamic here, and it relates to Bowen Byram. It relates to the Evander Kane deal. We can dig into that next. Talk a little Thatcher Demko potential extension. What does that mean for Artur Shelov's? There's a lot going on here, so stay tuned for more Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. To Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Shout out to producer Zach, bringing the heat on the tunes, as always, on a Friday here. All right, so we are still waiting to see what the return is that Columbus is sending to Colorado for Charlie Coyle. And as we were just saying before the break, I think that's going to be fascinating to see exactly what got that deal done, given all of the talk about the reluctance for teams to take on futures and, you know, every team dangling a center out there basically saying, well, you know, we're only going to do it if we get an equivalent player back. So we'll see what ultimately ends up getting the deal done there. As we wait for the return, though, you know, we were talking about Bowen Byram and how in a vacuum we get it. Really interesting young player, high upside, the potential maybe to get a bit of a value on the acquisition cost because of his contract status, injury concerns, et cetera, but just really hard to see the fit from a hockey perspective for the Vancouver Canucks. I think the key part of all of the reporting happening around Bowen Byram, though, is the consistent emphasis that this is a player who wants to be a Vancouver Canuck. And we heard that with Evander Kane, right? This was a guy, as I said, who used his leverage to become a Vancouver Canuck. We've also heard about a couple of extensions that might get done over the next few days, in particular Connor Garland, which sounds like very, very likely on July 1st or shortly thereafter, we're going to hear about a six-year, $6 million AAV extension for Connor Garland. And I think the common theme that binds all of those together is a real heightened interest in players who aren't just willing to play here or like, oh, yeah, well, if they're giving me the most money, I'll go there. But players who actively, proactively want to be a part of the Vancouver Canucks organization. And that could be because of local ties, right? Evander Kane's from here. Bowen Byram played his junior hockey here. He's from BC. That could be because, hey, Connor Garland has found a lot to love about living and playing in Vancouver. He's from Massachusetts, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be open to it. But whatever the case is, if you have a player who's emphatic about it, like, I really want to be a part of that organization, I think it's clear that that's catching this management group's interest, and that's something they're willing to prioritize. Now, there's limits to that, obviously. I think Brock Besser would have loved to remain a Vancouver Canuck, and it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to see the path forward on that relationship. But I find it fascinating, and I think pretty interesting as a strategy. Like, I think there are worse ways you could go, especially if we're talking about if we're letting our minds wander a year or maybe 2 years down the road to a post Quinn Hughes future, and you think about like what rebuilding from that seismic shock would look like for the organization. I think you could do a lot worse than prioritizing guys that have an attachment to the city, guys that are really, really excited to be Vancouver Canucks. Like, I think there's something to say for that. There might be some wonky moments on the path, you know what I mean, where it's like, why are you getting Byram? You're already set on the left side. But I don't hate it as a strategy.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think you can really build an efficient team out of mercenaries anymore. You need to build a team of players that want to play in your market. That needs to be at least the spine of your supporting cast, and realistically more than that. I think you've seen evidence of it today with John Tavares staying in Toronto four times $4.4 million, right? Mm-hmm. Tavares was the only 30-goal scorer headed to July 1.
I'll throw another one at you. Riley Smith. We didn't talk about it in Vegas. Yeah. Riley Smith, 1 year, $2 million. Yep. Absolutely could have gotten more than that. But, you know, but he freaking loves Vegas.
Duchesne. Yeah. Duchesne in Dallas. You're going to see at least one and maybe two of those Florida Panthers, those big Florida Panthers UFAs, be an example of it, too.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of really interesting options that will accrue to teams that are able to identify and bring in the players that want to be part of their organization. And the Canucks are obviously hitting that angle. Like, I think the Kane, Garland, Demko through line is really strong, and I think it applies also to Vancouver's otherwise mystifying interest in Bowen Byram.
Exactly. That's the part of the puzzle that makes it make sense.
Correct.
It's like, okay, high upside young player who has an attachment to our team. We'll overlook the fit because that's really interesting. And yep. when you spell it out like that, it's like, okay, I kind of get it. I mean, I think it's especially interesting considering what we've talked about for a couple of years on this program now, which is this wave of talent from BC and from Western Canada. Well, like, do you want to position yourself as like, hey, there's a lot of good BC players, guys. Come on home and play together.
I'd have a lot more patience for your angle if the Canucks had positioned themselves more proactively in selecting them in the first place.
That would be nice.
You know, like, wouldn't it be nice to have an anchor representative of like that, you know, well, legendary Vancouver Vipers team. Like that legendary Vancouver Vipers team that had all those guys who went in the first or second round in 2023. Bedard obviously was the star player on that team, but Andrew Crystal's like absolutely nuked the WHL since he was drafted. Benson, we know what he's done hanging around in the NHL for both of his teenage seasons. Matthew Wood at UConn. I mean, that team's been ascendant in NCAA hockey. Lucas Dragicevich has continued to be a productive WHL defenseman, went in the second round. I mean, that team like never lost a game in spring hockey.
Well, and I'd even go back a couple of years, like Logan Stankoven, right?
Totally.
You know what I mean? There's been these opportunities to capitalize on it, and you're right. They have not prioritized it in the past. I have no issue with making it a little bit more of a priority going forward. Now, one name that people might connect and is part of this conversation, which I am not quite sure is correct, is Matthew Barzal. And his name's been out there. I believe David Pignota of the Fourth Period suggested that teams are calling, teams are inquiring, and you see, look, clearly, new general manager of the New York Islanders, Matthew Darche, has a lot of balls in the air here. He's got a lot going on. We know they're going to select Matthew Schaefer first overall tonight. There's clearly a desire to get back into, you know, anywhere in the 5 to 10 range to take James Haggins, who's the local kid from Long Island as well. If you're doing that, if you're putting all your effort into that, are you also committed to keeping guys like Barzal, Horvat, et cetera? So I understand why the name is out there. I think it's notable. Stefan Rosner, who covers the New York Islanders, said that he would be shocked, or I believe stunned was his word. He would be absolutely stunned if they ended up. Here it is. Would be stunned if Barzal got traded, .. stunned. So he says, I know Van has wanted Barzal, the BC native, forever, but Rosner pouring some cold water on the idea that he could be available. And that matches what we've heard prior to this week from the New York Islanders and from the reporting around the New York Islanders that they're not interested in trading for either trading either Barzal or Horvat away. Look, if Matt Barzal is on the table, you got to do what you got to do, I think, to go get that player. I would still be very, very surprised if that is a piece that the Islanders want to move today.
Yeah. I would be too. I'm not expecting that, but you know, having moved Dobson, if they're going to make another deal for Haggins, right? If they're sort of under new management going in more of a rebuild direction, I think it becomes pretty interesting. It certainly becomes something we have to keep our eye on.
I think Darche at least has positioned himself to come out of this draft with like a ton of credibility and capital in that market. Like, if he keeps first overall and gets Haggins, they're going to be over the moon. That is a really, really impressive way to begin your tenure in a new city. And I think that will give him the flexibility to try a bunch of different other things. And maybe that is more of a long-term rebuild or at least more of a future-focused path that involves moving out someone like Horvat or Matt Barzal. Until it materializes, I'm going to be a little bit skeptical about it. Okay.
Skepticism is fair. I think we should keep our eye on it.
That's fair. Okay. We haven't really talked, just in passing, in the, you know, sign guys who really want to be here angle with Connor Garland. But Connor Garland, 6x6 extension, sounds very, very likely to be done when he's eligible on July 1st. So that's Tuesday or a few days after anyways. We'll see if the Canucks take care of their other business on July 1st. First, before getting to that, your reaction to 6x6 to keep Connor Garland in Vancouver, I believe, until he's 36 years old.
Yeah. You know, club views Garland as an essential part of their future. But that's what this deal tells us, and that's the fact here. It's pretty incredible that Garland has gone from like being very much on the trade block when this management group first came in to winning everyone over to this extent. I think that reflects something I mentioned a couple times over the course of this year, which is the sense of his emergence as like a locker room leader, as opposed to, you know, like, I want to put this right, not like a distraction or anything super negative, just, you know, sort of like a less serious, like a joker kind of, you know, like a guy who works hard and a guy who works hard, a guy who gives it his all every shift, but, you know, not a guy who's like necessarily setting the pace of practice or
not
holding people accountable internally.
Not a problem, but not the leader.
Yeah.
You know, just like in the middle, which is where most guys reside.
Totally. Pulling the rope on the right direction,
yeah,
but not at the front of the line.
Yeah.
Right. which is a totally normal place to be. Yeah. But that,
like, by definition, that's what most players are.
Correct. And that changed at some point over the last 18 months, and you started to hear different things about him, and then the way he was talked about became very different over the course, especially of this year, but also through part of last year when the team was rolling the way they were. So, yeah, I mean, I think that all factors into this. Six times six, that's going to age really well. You know, I do think there's a sense to which the club views Garland as kind of like a known quantity.
Right.
You know, it's just like, we know what we're going to get from him every single night. We know what we're going to get from him, generally speaking. We know that his game can hold up in the playoffs. Like, he's a piece that we can kind of set it and forget it. He can play first, second, third line. He can drive the second or third line. I don't know that he's as much of a driver on the top.
No, yeah.
Which is fine. That's totally normal. He's a good playmaker. He can help us on the power play. He showed out actually when used as a penalty killer last year, had his best defensive season. So I think they view it as like a staple guy that they wanted to commit to and might even commit to on the very first day that he's eligible for a long-term deal.
I think it makes a lot of sense. And I know there has been sticker shock, and I think more on the term probably than the AAV. And then look, anytime you're signing a non-star player to until they're 36, there's always going to be risk on the back end of that deal. That's the nature of doing long-term extensions like these. I think on the AAV, this has been kind of a great opportunity for everyone to start the process of adjusting their immediate reactions to deals, right? Because ultimately, like, this is just an update of the contract he's on. This is barely a raise for him if you look at it as a percentage of the cap, given where the salary cap is going. And remember, this doesn't kick in for another year. So he's going to play next season on the $4.9 million deal, the last one. Then it's going to go to $6 million. By like the second year of the extension, it's going to be essentially the same percentage of the cap as his current deal. So you're basically just saying, like, yeah, you're a cost-effective player for us now. We're just going to update it for the new salary cap reality, and you'll be a cost-effective player for us going forward as well. And I think when you consider how desperate the Canucks are for play drivers and playmakers, guys who can do the work of getting the team going in the right direction, but also set up others in the offensive zone, they do not have a lot of players that fit that description. Connor Garland is one of them. And again, you also consider the dynamic of how difficult it is, like how fraught this team having expiring players on the roster is, like a key expiring players on the roster. We saw it with Brock Besser and Pew Suter this year. I really think, and we'll talk about this with Thatcher Demko and the dynamic there in a second, but I think Connor Garland is good enough where the team should have been looking at it as, we're either going to extend him or trade him this week. Like, he fits that profile where I would not have trusted the team to go into next season with Connor Garland as a pending unrestricted free agent, because we've seen how that plays out. So if you like him, why wait? Don't let him spike in a contract year. Don't turn it into a Pew Suter situation or a Brock Besser situation. Just go out, get the deal done, lock in a player who's been really effective and who fills very, very important needs for you. And if they weren't going to do that, they should have traded him. But I'm happy to see Connor Garland sticking around for the next 7 years. One more year and then six after that on his extension. That's going to be, if he plays out that contract, that's going to be 11 full seasons with the Vancouver Canucks. Which is like,
yeah, he's going to be on franchise
that
record
puts
leaderboards.
You like way up in the like games played and points scored. And
does
yeah.
he get Ring of Honor?
It's like totally a possibility.
Absolutely a possibility.
There's got to be probably some more playoff appearances and success in there, but like it's on the table for sure.
He should do like a little bit more visible community outreach, which isn't to criticize him or say he's not doing any of it. It's just like he's not doing the like with cameras in the building visit to whatever XYZ.
Sure,
do a little more of that. He can definitely be a Ring of Honor guy. Are you kidding? For sure.
Yeah. Get like a box that he brings. Like,
I mean, how many points does he already have in his Canucks career? Like hundreds.
Yes.
Multiple hundreds of points, because he's basically been a 50-point guy.
Yeah, it's almost like exact. He's just shy of 200 points.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's gone 52, 46, 47, 50.
Yeah.
So in his like, four seasons.
Yeah. I mean, he's a really good player. It's really simple. He's a really good player. I don't really think he should be on power play one.
Nope.
But that's my only very soft criticism of Connor Garland, who's been a player that I've generally been higher than market on, I think, throughout his Canucks tenure and remain. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a problem with this deal, and I don't have a problem with the risk of signing him through the age of 36 either, just because with where the cap is going, you know, Garland's one more 55-point season from blowing a 6M per year valuation right out of the water.
Yeah. All right. That's the Connor Garland potential extension.
Do we have the return yet?
I don't think so. I've been refreshing like mad, but I haven't seen it. But we'll see if we can find it out there. Oh.
Two draft picks, not a prospect.
Not first-round picks and a prospect for Coyle.
Okay.
So futures. Futures are back on. Looks like futures are back on the menu, boys.
That might make the Coyle deal the first one. I mean, again, let's wait till we see it. But based on Aaron Portsline's reporting, my colleague at The Athletic, multiple draft picks, not first rounders, and a prospect for Coyle. I really like that for a Columbus Blue Jackets team that almost had too much cap space to spend this summer. Just vaguely, we'll see who the prospect is. We'll see exactly how valuable the picks are. But that becomes sort of the first deal we've seen come through where I really do think that that's something the Canucks should have considered strongly.
You skated right past my sick Lord of the Rings reference.
Which was it?
Looks like futures are back on the menu, boys.
Okay.
I was really happy with it. You just ignored it.
Jamie Dodd is kind of a hobbit's name, by the way. Couldn't you see that? Like,
I gotta say, the hobbits have a sick lifestyle.
Oh yeah.
The hobbits have an awesome lifestyle.
So many meals, so many naps.
Yeah.
They don't wear boat shoes though.
They don't wear shoes at all. You're right. If they were to wear shoes, I bet it would be boat shoes.
Yeah,
but you're right,
wrong.
They don't wear shoes.
But seriously, can you see someone be like, oh yes, Jamie, he's a Dodd of Tuckborough.
Hitting the pipe, going to the tavern with the boys. Sounds amazing.
Honestly, yeah. Going, you know that I subscribe to a hobbit's lifestyle because they have a meal between brunch and lunch.
11
There's never been a more drance thing than
Absolutely not. Anyways, all right. So two picks, no first rounders, and a prospect for Coyle. I agree. And now we'll wait. The devil's always in the details, right? We'll wait and see what exactly those picks and the prospect in particular is. But looks like good work from Columbus to get Charlie Coyle. And again, I started off the show saying this, like, I'm very, very curious to see if the sellers are going to hold the line here and stick to their absolutely no futures stance. And it doesn't look like it's going that way so far.
Yeah. And by the way, so you move Coyle if you're the Colorado Avalanche. That's going to give you about $7-8 million in cap space to play with. So now you're in the same market as teams like the Canucks. What does that open up for them? Is it just about like keeping Jonathan Drouin, which they should do? He's like a 50-point guy for them, right?
Yeah.
Is it just about that? Is it just Malinsky space? What other options does it open up for them?
By the way, Adam from Bowen points out correctly that clearly hobbits would wear Birkenstocks if they were going to wear shoes, which is correct. Anyways, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I was just pivoting to the Thatcher Demko discussion. We've heard not with the same certainty on numbers and term and AAV and all of that we've heard with Connor Garland, but we continue to hear progress being made. There's a path towards Thatcher Demko signing an extension when he's eligible on July 1st with the Vancouver Canucks. Now, this one seems to be a little bit more up in the air still, and I think it was Frank Saravalli who said on Halford and Brough today that this is going two ways. Either they're going to reach an agreement on an extension in the very, very near future, or the Canucks are going to trade Thatcher Demko by July 1st. So that's a few days. And it seems like it's very, very much trending towards the extension side of things. And I think a big part of the evidence behind that, and I know you've reported this with Dhaliwal, is that Artur Shelov's name is very, very out there as a trade chip as a result, which is the thing you have to do once you sign Thatcher Demko to an extension.
Yeah, I was already hearing really positive reports about Demko and extension talks and how that was moving with Vancouver. But last night we heard that Shelov's had been offered to some teams, and that really pushed me over the edge in terms of handicapping this as being far more likely than not that Demko will be extended. I started reporting this optimism 10 days ago, something
probably,
like that.
Yeah.
On our airwaves. And it's really sort of gone. It's continued to hit those markers that you're looking for. Now, I guess Saravalli's framing, I think, is right. And I think the Shelov's part of this is a testament to that. But I'd frame this more positively, or more as I'd frame this with a little more confidence about a Demko extension being where we are trending toward.
Yeah.
I think there's real optimism for the Canucks that this is going to get done. I'm not sure if it's going to get done precisely on July 1st, but certainly they're hopeful that it's going to get done sooner or later. Canucks brasses. And they view it as Demko's healthy right now. He's in a good frame of mind. And the reports from his offseason training regimen are through the roof positive. Now, one save, right, or one moment can obviously change that. There's no question that this is a deal with risks. But I think the way the club views it anyway is every player has risks. And not every player has the upside to steal us a game, much less a playoff series, much less multiple playoff series, the way that Thatcher Demko does. That's how the club views it. They view him as a top three goaltender when healthy and in the right frame of mind, and they think he is right now. And so that's where they're at. That's why they've decided to really prioritize getting this done. And as a result, you know, and look.
Well, and it fits what we were talking about on the show yesterday, right? We're buying what's always been the selling point for this Canucks team for 5 years, which is Hughes, Pettersson, Demko.
Hughes, Pettersson, Demko.
That's
a last stand.
Yeah.
A last stand. And you know, my view of it is the key thing is you needed to be eyes wide open about your goaltending situation. You had three guys. One of them had to go. The one who had to go was not going to be Lankinen. So it was one of Demko or Shelovs, and I totally understand why the club would prefer the known quantity recent Vezina nominee as opposed to the guy who was unplayable at the NHL level, even if he was a star mm-hmm. American League playoff champion across the last 2 months.
Now, part of this, it's always, you know, there's always two sides of this, and the one factor is the opportunity cost of not dealing Demko, and I'm not even necessarily advocating for this, but part of the reporting around it has been there's a lot of interest. And that teams would be willing to offer, I think, fairly significant returns for the services of Thatcher Demko, which is no surprise considering the peak he has, the peak that he could potentially reach for you and only $5 million AAV this year. It just doesn't sound like, and I think it's very similar, in fact, in a lot of ways to the Elias Pettersson discussion, where I think people would probably be pleasantly surprised at what other teams would be willing to give up for Elias Pettersson. But it's just not enough to force a pivot from Canucks management. And I think it's a similar issue here with Thatcher Demko. Obviously, there's a little more openness. He's extension eligible. And if you can't get an extension done, if you can't find a way to share that risk, as Jim Rutherford put it at the end of the regular season, then yeah, you got to move on. But it just sounds like the interest is there, but just not enough to shake them from or push them off the path that they've chosen, which is very much we want to see a team built around Hughes, Pettersson, and Thatcher Demko.
Yeah, we're in on this core. We think some of them might be even better than people realize. That was Jim Rutherford's comments about this group the day he took over.
Yep.
And they've never really bent from that. I think it's the, you know, being in on this core has been sort of the defining feature of the Rutherford era to this point. And I would say, given how last season unfolded, I don't know that that's been a winning bet yet.
We're going to try it again, though.
Yeah, like, so, you know, this is one where, you know, it's going to be incumbent on Pettersson to bounce back and on Thatcher Demko and you know, to have his games managed and to bounce back, perform at a really high level, right? I think it's going to be on this group, too, to carry themselves a certain way, right? To publicly, from a public-facing perspective, like act as leaders for this organization, you know. And I don't know that they all have always. I mean, Quinn Hughes has, but I would say the other two like haven't always been at that level. Pettersson has been in the past, but that fell off this year. Demko hasn't been in the past, but really came on this year in terms of being frank and accountable, and personable, and in explaining his situation, transparent to the fans. Like, you know, setting the tone of practice, all of that stuff, yep. Right? Like, that side of it has to be non-negotiable for these three. You know, and again, I think it always has been with Quinn, and certainly the hard-working element always has with Demko. But yeah, I mean, this is on them now. And I think that at some point, right, this front office, which has tied themselves so closely to this group of star players, you know, their bet needs to actually like hit this year.
Yeah, that would be nice. That'd
be nice. It's essential.
It is indeed. From boardrooms to break rooms and everything in between, JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. We are mere hours away from the NHL draft, round one, starting in LA tonight. The Canucks still own the 15th overall pick, so the clock is ticking. We can touch briefly on some options for them if they do hold the 15th overall pick and get up there and make the selection tonight. We can talk about that. Hey, labor peace in the NHL. The NHL and the PA have agreed to a new CBA that goes for the next four seasons, so we can talk a little bit about that. Continue to monitor. We can mention it at least.
Well, we mentioned it.
There we go. 84 games.
Also, there was a framing where they were like, you know, it's an insult to talk about the state tax advantage to those very good teams. And it's like, oh, really? Is that why those general managers have never once brought up that factor in making contract offers to their players?
Yeah.
Like, I get it that the CBA addressing it, we didn't see it as a structural priority, given that we're only, you know, 5 years removed from teams in Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Los Angeles being the dominant teams in the league, and we don't know that yet that it's fully taxes. We're going to study it and consider it over the life of this next CBA. Like, if that's your answer, that's your answer. But to pretend that not the players and teams themselves aren't talking about this constantly, and that it's an insult to even question whether it's a factor, is just so NHL in its disingenuousness that actually sent me for a bit of a loop.
I just don't know what they can do about it. I think you're very limited in what you can do about it.
There's a million things you can do about it. If you want to.
About the state tax thing?
Easily. You just create it. You can easily create a cap that strips out at tax rates.
So adjusts for local tax rates. That seems like a nightmare to me.
What do you mean?
I don't know. That just seems like an administrative nightmare. Especially when you factor in all, I don't want to get off too much on this, but especially when you factor like the changes, but also the methods players currently have.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, the truth is
to limit their exposure.
Totally. Well, the truth is that one thing people never bring up either is that the state tax advantage doesn't even apply when these players are on the road, which is literally for half the season. And it also doesn't really apply for anyone but UFAs. So, you know, if you think it's a 10% advantage, the fact that it only applies for home games makes it about a 6% advantage. Then when you consider that most of an NHL team's roster at any given moment is comprised of players who signed as RFAs or on entry-level deals, it's more like a 2% advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we're spending more time talking about it than we should be. Yep. But I still didn't like the lack of transparency. Just the idea that it's like, oh, how could you even consider that? What an insult to Bill Zito. It's like, no. Bill Zito, McCrimmon.
Bill Zito's hammering it in negotiations.
Yeah, they're and in no way does using every advantage at your disposal take away from the fact that Bill Zito's on an epic heater.
Yeah.
Like a historic Sam Pollock level heater. Like, kudos to you. It's no insult to the state that you also have some natural advantages that you've crushed it at taking advantage of. It's not an insult.
All right, we'll take a break here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. More Canucks talk next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Guests on Sportsnet 650, call in on the hotline. Powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on, and Dimitri will be joining us at 1:30, not on the hotline, in studio as usual. So we'll wrap up the week as we always do with Dimitri here on the show. We have some clarity on the trade return we are waiting for. Latest trade to break in the NHL sees Charlie Coyle and Miles Wood going from the Colorado Avalanche to the Columbus Blue Jackets, going the other way, a second in 2027, a third this year, and prospect Gavin Brindley, who was a second overall pick in 2023.
Second round pick.
Second round pick in 2023 undersized center, didn't have a great year in the AHL, so I would say probably his value has diminished since he was the 34th overall pick in 2023. I think the Miles Wood inclusion in this deal makes it make a lot more sense. He has four more seasons left on his deal at 2.5, a 29-year-old bottom six player. This looks like much more of a pure salary cap clearing move for Colorado. And so now I think, one, you know, good bit of business for Columbus. As you were saying, they had nothing but cap space. It was going to be hard for them to use it. So they do kind of an old school thing here where they get Charlie Coyle and take on some of the less efficient money in Miles Wood as well. And now the big question to me is what's next for Colorado, right? They cleared a lot of salary cap space by making this deal, by not taking a roster player back from Columbus. And so now they're set up to be potentially more aggressive and more active looking to upgrade their roster.
Yeah, so they now have $10 million in cap space, basically, because Miles Wood makes like 2.5 for like a long time.
For four more seasons.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Miles Wood from a Caps perspective, from the Columbus Blue Jackets perspective, right? I think you look at that, you look at Miles Wood as probably additive in terms of just how much cap space that team had and how difficult it was going to be to lure mm-hmm. players to Columbus. Like, you know, in the vein of the players that want to be there conversation, right? I was thinking about this the other day. Like, one thing that's never happening again in the flat cap era, right, is a player like Johnny Gaudreau, you know, RIP,
mm-hmm.
hitting unrestricted free agency, and him and his family being like, we really want to play in Philadelphia. And Philadelphia being like, we don't have the cap space to make it work, and it would cost us too much to create it. And so them being like, you know what? Columbus is close enough.
Pretty close.
That's never happening again.
Yeah, because teams will just make it work. It'll be easy enough to make it work.
They'll get paid to make it work.
Yeah.
As we just saw, like, at the same time that this looks like a meager return for Charlie Coyle, right? The truth is that they also just, the Colorado Avalanche just got paid to get out of $15 million worth of cap liability. They got a second, a third in Brindley to get out of a cap liability attached to a fourth line forward with serious discipline issues. And, you know, a center who did, you know, like I wouldn't say lost a step. That's probably a little bit dramatic, but his speed fell off a little bit last year anyway. And that's, you know, not extremely, I'm not like worried about Charlie Coyle. I would have thought it was a good acquisition for the Canucks, but this used to be a guy with like a lot of sort of speed and size. And, you know, his top skating speed, his speed bursts over 20 miles per hour have kind of fallen off a little bit relative to his career norms the last 2 years, or at least his top speed did. Miles Wood, though, from a Columbus perspective, you know, these guys really fit how you want to play. I mean, Miles Wood is like a legit, you know, hyperdrive type grinder. He takes too many penalties. That's the big issue there. But that's true of a lot of players that play on the edge, right? Like it's true of Evander Kane, right? That's something you sort of live with. Yeah, Miles Wood hit 84.8 miles per hour last year, the 99th percentile skating speed. Insane stuff from him. So yeah, I mean, I really like this for Columbus overall. I think this is a good opportunity seized and a good an instructive example actually of how teams dealing with being an undesirable location, relatively speaking, right? They're not Florida, they're not low state tax in Ohio, but dealing with some of those factors can take advantage of a team preparing to make a bigger swing or take a bigger swing, and sort of buying affordably the sorts of players that would be difficult for them to acquire or entice to join their club in unrestricted free agency. I like this a lot.
Yeah, it makes a lot more sense. I think the inclusion of Miles Wood makes the return and everything, why it is futures, really come into clarity, because they're trying to clear the decks. They're trying to clear cap space. Clearly, they have something on their minds, whether it's a trade or whether it's a player they'd like to target in free
agency. Dom's model, however, sees this as unbelievable.
Well, it's really low on Miles Wood, right?
Yeah.
I don't disagree. Like, Miles Wood can be an interesting add for Columbus and also a player that Colorado is thrilled to move on from, right? Because they're just a completely different stages and in completely different salary cap situations. If I was Colorado, I would have been desperate to move on from Miles Wood too, if he's preventing you from doing things to upgrade the top end of your roster. And if you're Columbus, as you say, like, hey, hardworking guy, super speedy, fits into our identity. We're probably not going to spend right to the cap anyways, especially with how high it's going. Like, it's not going to hurt us. It's not going to prevent us from doing anything. So it's not that big a deal. We got to use our cap space somehow. I get it from both teams' perspective.
Yeah.
Teams are
probably worth noting too, like, this market is so difficult to navigate. And if you're willing to accept futures for players the way Colorado just has, you know, there's probably some edge that you accumulate. And, you know, Florida with Sortif, Colorado with this deal, which also saves them a ton of cap space. And in Florida, it's more like a roster slot and a getting out ahead of and managing the value of a you know, player that's no longer going to be waiver exempt once you sign him to their next deal. But you sort of look at that and think, you know, that's good work. That's artillery added to, you know, an asset base for those teams to utilize here. And you got to like that, too.
All right. I did just want to update everyone, as we've barely talked about this at all on the show, but we are on the day of the draft and we're a few hours here. We'll see how long it actually takes to unfold the first round. And by the way, you can get full draft coverage here on the station, of course, on Sportsnet TV as well. Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah will have an extended 4-hour edition of Canuck Central coming up starting at 4 o'clock. We'll see when pick 15 eventually gets onto the clock, whether it's the Canucks or another team making it. We've barely talked about who they're considering picking, if they are the team making that pick. I did just want to kind of note and mention your Athletic colleague Corey Pronman's day of round one final mock draft, which is always really, really insightful. It usually has some surprising picks in it, but those picks often prove out, end up being correct, because this is a really, really valuable piece of reporting that Corey Pronman does. And in it, and you know, he's not accounting for trades or anything here. He connects the Canucks to a few different names. One, Braden Coutts, who we've heard, Cole Reschny, who we've heard, and one that we haven't necessarily heard as much, but who he has the Canucks actually picking at 15 is Jack Nesbitt, who's big center, 6'4", out of Windsor in the Ontario League. Scoring rate, I think, was just shy of a point per game, and there's concerns about his skating speed as well. Doesn't surprise me, though, to see 6'4" center connected to the Vancouver Canucks, and especially in that range, right in the middle of the first round, feels like a range where a lot of teams are going to be saying, you know what, this guy's projectable and his scoring rate is kind of just enough to justify the pick slot. We'll roll the dice on this. So first time I've seen it, but makes a lot of sense as well.
Yeah, the other thing that I've been told is to don't ignore the possibility of the Canucks looking at a defenseman.
Sure.
You know, Rick and I have been hearing an OHL defenseman stands out for them. We believe it's Kayshawn Aitchison, but I'd say that's informed speculation as opposed reporting.
I believe it was Scott Wheeler on our show mentioned Cameron Reed as well, right, who's an OHL defenseman. So that would be a couple of different options.
Yeah. So, but I've been told the defenseman option, even though the club is apparently stacked there, you know, like the club has a lot of young defenders. So it would seem odd to, on some level, if they were to go defense in this draft. And yet, you know, I think we learned that with the Volander draft, where it was like the team was always going to sign a defender. They were never going to consider undersized wingers, for example. And, you know, you arrive at a place 2 years later and this team's hungry for forwards.
You're loaded on the blue line, like, and you're like, dang, we could use some wingers.
Life moves too fast.
It really does.
You know, it like life moves too fast here for you to, or for any team, frankly, to sort of.
I also will say, like, so Aitchison.
Sorry.
No.
Life moves too fast for any team to prioritize positional need at the draft.
Yeah.
That's it.
The Aitchison pick, because Aitchison's calling card is the elite physicality, right? And not just the physicality, but like the mentality to really bring that to bear.
Elite aggressiveness, because it also applies to the way that he joins the rush and such.
Aggressiveness is a great way of putting it. That's also DPD's calling card, right? And it's like, I can think of worse ways than, like, you know what? there's this guy who's like hyper aggressive and physical, and he's also a legitimate first round talent. It's like, yeah, let's just get all of those guys on the back end. I don't have a problem with that. That sounds awesome. Going five years down the road, and you've got, oh yeah, we've got these two killers on the blue line.
Everyone changed their number to 50, something in the 50s. Tinted visors. Find yourself a cool nickname like the Legion of Boom. Come on. You see the vision, right?
The linebacking core defenseman.
Are you kidding me?
That would actually be so sick.
It'd be so sick. Some team needs to do it. You know?
I love it.
The Yale Town Monsters. I don't know. Whatever. Obviously, that's not good.
No.
It was the first try.
We'll keep trying.
Yeah. But I want it.
We'll keep iterating.
I would love that. I honestly think that would be one of the coolest things we've seen in hockey in a long, long time.
That would be awesome. And
I'm going to keep pitching this until someone does it, by the way.
Yeah, and just as even beyond the pithy nickname and the football connection and all that, yeah, go get a bunch of wicked hard hitters on your blue line. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, and then give them a cool nickname, make them all wear numbers in the 50s and tinted visors.
Then we definitely include that as well.
You know I'm right.
650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So at this point, and we talked a little bit, I know Sat had the tweet that, you know, hey, this might depend on who's on the board and everything. And you said as well, sometimes your pick is most valuable when you're on the clock, right? Are you getting the sense that, like, should we expect it to come right down to the wire? I almost feel like we're entering that stage where it's like, if you haven't moved it now, you may as well wait to kind of see how the draft board shakes out. Like I almost get the sense we're into the calm before the storm time here with just a few hours to go before the draft gets going in LA.
I don't know, man.
You think they're still working the phones pretty hard here? I would imagine so.
They're especially because there's no moment where everyone has to get up from the boardroom in whatever hotel they've been in and go up and put on their suit and walk and or take transport to the arena and go through security and show your credentials and then start chatting with everybody on the draft floor, right? Like, everyone's just in their offices around North America today.
Yep.
And so I don't expect there to be a calm before the storm. I expect the work to continue. Yeah. I think this is going to be a very different, just for those logistical reasons, I suspect that this is going to be a very different workflow and thus a very different information flow than what we're used to on a typical draft day.
It's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic reflects things and changes things. And
what about the wrecking crew? I like that.
That's a good
suggestion.
The
wrecking crew.
That's a good suggestion.
The wrecking crew.
Keith and Kitts.
Let's go, Keith and Kitts.
I like that.
You see the vision.
I like that very much. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line.
The wrecking crew. Come on.
Is there anyone? Oh, no. That would be amazing. Are you kidding me?
The wrecking crew.
That would be incredible.
Let's go.
You talk about an identity for a team. Oh, that'd be fantastic.
And who wouldn't want that? Everyone would think it was sick.
Yeah, everyone would love it. People would be over the moon for that in this market. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
People would be absolutely all about it.
Like, let's bring some showmanship back to the league,
absolutely.
Everybody. The wrecking crew.
Is there a target out there other than Marco Rossi? And I'm proud of us. We've really limited our Marco Rossi discussion here on the show today, which has been a struggle for us at different times over the past few weeks. I, in particular, have become like obsessed almost with the idea of that deal getting done. Is there a target out there other than Marco Rossi that you're really keeping an eye on or you're really wondering about? Because it does feel like a lot of it has been Marco Rossi, and also every other center who's potentially available, but it doesn't feel like any of those other potential targets have really gained the sort of traction, either from A, the Canucks really being in on them, or from the team that they may reside on being motivated to trade them. Are there any other guys we haven't talked about as much that you're curious about as we get into the final hours before the draft?
Jared McCann.
So you think that's a live possibility?
I think that's a live-ish possibility, yeah. I mean, I think he's a winger. I know that the Canucks would view him as ideally a winger, but that doesn't mean he can't play center. He played center for Jim Rutherford in Pittsburgh. The club likes him. Obviously, they've acquired him in the past. 2 years left on a $5-ish million contract. We've seen the Kraken move out some money. We're not exactly sure what direction that franchise is going in, but we expect them to try and be aggressive on July 1. If another opportunity opens up, would they prefer to save that cap space? I don't really understand why they'd trade him, to be totally honest with you.
I've never got it either. That's never really made sense to me.
But I've never understood why Seattle's done a lot of things.
That's a fair point.
So, you know, are they in the middle of a shakeup? McCann has a 10-team no trade. Would he welcome a move back up the I-5 to where it all began?
That's interesting.
I don't know.
There's ways around no trade clauses.
I have no idea. But yeah, I mean, Jared McCann's really good. So he's a name that I'm certainly interested in. I don't think this one makes sense for the Canucks, but in a world where they can't land the top six guy, you know, is there a deal to be made with the New York Islanders for JG Pageau?
Probably.
Right-handed. Really good penalty killer. He's definitely a little bit, like, he's 32, and I do think he's lost a click or two off his fastball, but he's still a pretty productive, solid third-line center. Would still be an upgrade for Vancouver in terms of solidifying things. Like, you know, is that a team, like, could you get him in a package that involved, like, Dakota Joshua plus? You know, just yep. Like, sort of resort your positional needs there. You know, other than that, Morgan Geeky out of Boston.
Yeah, okay.
Again, he's another guy like McCann who's like center capable more than he is a natural centerman. I like him better as a right wing, but he's like a big-bodied goal scorer, really good in front of net, can absolutely launch the puck. More thick than tall, but like plays big. What?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's a total tuna can.
That's right.
What's your problem?
Makes sense.
So he's are you okay?
I'm fine.
So I mean, those would be some of the names. Is there anyone else that sticks out to you? Am I missing somebody?
No, somebody texted in, is Martin Natchez still available?
That's an interesting one.
I think that's a very interesting question that the texter poses. Is Martin Natchez still available?
It's a very interesting question.
Has no trade protection. He's extension eligible on July 1st. Going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. There's been, like, apparently he wasn't thrilled playing in Colorado either, which is kind of odd.
Yeah.
So, an interesting one.
I mean, I don't think Colorado's an easy place to play.
With Nathan MacKinnon?
Yeah, I think Nathan MacKinnon's a really demanding leader. And I think it's not for everybody, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, that's fair.
And that's okay, by the way. That's not criticism of Nathan MacKinnon. Pavel Zacha? I suppose I shouldn't ignore my guy, Pavel Zacha.
Natchez is one I'm really... That's a very interesting name. I'm surprised we haven't heard more or talked more about Natchez. Because that was also... That was going to be what the Pedersen to Carolina package was built around, right?
Yeah.
Was Martin Natchez.
Well, and so I guess the other guy we should talk about is Kotkaniemi.
Right, yeah.
Especially in a world if you're willing to include a bigger body, because that would be the reason that I think Carolina would be reluctant. You know, you've got a pretty good forward group, but other than Svechnikov, you're really built around like Aho and Jarvis and Jackson Blake, and you know, even some of their best young players are coming up are like smaller forwards, right? So, you know, Kotkaniemi, if they view that as a salary liability, certainly he's signed forever. Right? Would they be interested in a Joshua type, you know, Joshua plus of some kind? That team's always interested in draft picks.
Yep.
Joshua and 15 overall for Kotkaniemi, would you be upset with that?
I wouldn't love it. I would be looking for the higher upside move than Kotkaniemi, but it might not be out there.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, Kotkaniemi's only 24.
That's true.
He's like smack dab in his prime. And we are talking about a guy who has a 40-point season under his belt at the age of 20. You know, in that first year that he played in Carolina. We're talking about a guy who's played, you know, he literally has played more than 10 NHL playoff games every single season of his career except his rookie season. That's wild.
That is.
He's played 83 playoff games at the age of 24.
That's actually wild. That's
that is wild, man.
That's a lot of playoff
games. Yeah, no, you know what? I agree that Jesperi Kotkaniemi, because he's as liable to cut a puck in half as he is to make a great play when it's at his feet, is not like the highest upside play. But there's a lot of centermen. I mean, my guy Pavel Zacha, is he my guy? Is that fair? I don't think so.
You decide, man. I don't know.
I'm just saying, like, you know, he last three seasons, 47, 59, 57 points. That's his age 28, 27 and 26 season. Before that, he'd never hit 40 points.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he was a 25-point, 25-point, 32-point, 35-point, 36-point guy in New Jersey and broke out in his later 20s in Boston. Like, I think there's absolutely a path for Kotkaniemi to be a big, burly 50-point guy, especially if you're tossing him on the line with Connor Garland.
Yeah, that would be a good fit. I like that. I like it as part of the Wrecking Crew.
No, he's not a defenseman.
No, I know, but you got to do it forward, too. We had this discussion. The defensemen are the linebackers, and the forwards are the edge rushers.
Ooh.
So he's got to change. I don't know what number Kotkaniemi is now, but you got to get him a number in the 90s.
So well, I'd say it's more like the wingers.
The wingers, you're right. And
the centers are more like the DTs.
Yeah.
So you need like a bunch of like Kotkaniemi-sized human beings down the middle.
Yes.
And then
we're
putting
it together.
Yeah, and then you need a bunch of like long, you know how it looks when, like those long wingers, those like 6'4" wingers, and they're good on the forecheck. I'm thinking like prime Max Pacioretty,
sure,
or JVR, or you know who looked like this sometimes when they were lanking down the wall was that one breakout season that the Canucks got from Sean Matthias where they played him on
yes,
the wing.
Absolutely,
you know what I'm talking about though. So it's like a whole bunch of like 6'4" wingers with wheels.
Yep, I love it. Let's do it.
You're in?
I'm absolutely in. let's pitch this to Dmitry when we get him on. And Dmitry Filipovich is going to join us
next. I think
the
Wrecking Crew should apply only to the blue line. I want to be official.
That's fair. But I still think we can go football all over the roster. But the Wrecking Crew can be the defense corps. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dmitry Filipovich, host of the Hockey PDOcast, joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
It's time for Canucks Talk. With the T-Dog and the Jayhawks.
All right. I am fired up here on a Friday afternoon draft day. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live from the Kintech studio. 650-650, of course, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Now joining us, he is the host of the Hockey PDOcast, which you can hear on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He's our guy, Dmitry Filipovich. What's going on, Tim?
Fellas, we got anything to talk about? Anything going on?
You're distraught. The Columbus Blue Jackets.
I know.
Have broken your heart.
I know. We were so excited about them. Obviously still have, what, $34 million or so in cap space even after this deal, so got more than they can spend. But for an organization I think we generally think of as being a pretty smart one, showed a lot of flashes.
I guess.
Yeah, I think they've made pretty smart moves generally. They've drafted really well. They've accumulated a bunch of assets.
Sure. You look
at their cap sheet. And Sean Monahan, prior to this trade, was their only forward making over $4 million. Next season, there's just so much empty canvas to work with. And not only did they let the Avs off the hook by taking on a massive salary off two guys who clearly weren't in their plans for this season, but gave them a bunch of pretty good draft capital as well, dealing from a surplus. But man, I hated that trade for the Blue Jackets. And I was so excited to come on with you guys. And this one just really soured the mood a little bit.
Took the wind out of your sails? Like, oh, no.
It really did.
I don't know. Charlie Coyle was going to go for positive value, though, right? Like, a second and a third doesn't feel out of step for Charlie Coyle to me.
And with the minimum salary...
Tim's so upset at me.
No, and with the minimum salary going up, you're probably going to be able to bury at least half of Miles Wood's contract in the American League by the second year of the deal. He is just like always in the penalty
box. I will say that's like one of the classic when you get to that stage of your analysis on a trade. It's the classics. Like, well, it'll be easy to buy out in 3 years. It's a bad deal.
Sorry, you're right.
That means it's a bad deal.
That is the he's fast for a big guy of trade analysis. 100%.
When you're already like talking about how they can get out of the salary, it's like, oh, maybe this
isn't
so great.
You're right. But if you have Charlie Coyle and he's good, you know, you just have a huge team of fast skaters. I don't hate that. And if you're able to get more value out of Coyle than you paid at the deadline, is that not just like buying a better asset for, you know, $1 million in annoying cap space for across 3 years when you have more than you can spend anyway?
There's no way you're getting more than a second, a third, and a really good prospect for Charlie Coyle at the deadline.
Yeah, you're probably right.
No.
I do think, though, that there's a trend here, and that's that there's no free lunch, right? Evander Kane goes for positive value despite the position that the Oilers were in. Mason Marchment goes for positive value despite the position that the Dallas Stars were in. Now you've got Miles Wood and Charlie Coyle going for positive value. I just think the cap growth era is going to create this dynamic where even problem contracts are movable and are movable at positive value in a way that we just haven't seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, but just because other teams are doing dumb stuff doesn't necessarily mean that you need to follow that logic and do that yourself as well.
Fair enough.
That's an interesting point.
Tom, I don't know if you were in the building for this one. I think it was like early February.
Okay.
The Avs were in town, and Miles Wood had probably the most unhinged individual game I've ever seen.
Him and Ross Colton both lost their minds against the Canucks.
I was in the building for that. But then in the third, he took like four minor penalties, got a misconduct. It was just insane. And then in this playoffs, he plays one game because I believe Ross Colton got hurt, so they put him in the lineup in game two. He plays 12 minutes. He's on the ice for 3 goals against, including a horrible decision on the overtime winner. And I think at that point, Jared Bednar and the Avs were like, you know what? We're done. Let us off this ride. And so I think for them, getting off that contract is pretty nice for them.
So what we were talking about center options for the Canucks tonight, because they want to use that 15th overall pick to get a center if they can. So they're on the clock. We're really talking about them being down to the last 5 hours or so, 5.5 hours to make that deal. Some of the names we listed, let's go lightning round in just like one sentence. If you like the pick, if you like the fit, and you think they'd be worth a 15 plus, okay? Jared McCann.
Yes. I really like Jared McCann. I thought as he certainly should have been traded, probably as a winger. Yeah. But I mean, he can play there in a pinch. I just love his shooting talent. And I really felt like the Kraken probably should have monetized that at the deadline last year, and they didn't, and they held on to him. So we'll see. They've made a bunch of, obviously, they acquire Burakovsky, they acquire Freddie Gaudreau as well. So they're adding roster players. They have a bunch of guys up there up front already. So we'll see if he's available. I would like Jared McCann. He'd probably be on the high end in terms of like actual just talent and production that you could get.
Yeah, I don't get it from the Kraken perspective, really, but if he's available, sure. Absolutely.
I never get anything from the Kraken perspective, though. Pavel Zacha?
I'm out. I'm not a Zacha guy. I think we've talked about this before. I get the theory behind it in terms of the size and the theoretical skill. Unfortunately, I've watched a lot of Zacha over the years. And aside from brief moments when he gets to just benefit from playing with David Pastrnak, I haven't really seen him ever leverage that on a consistent basis. And he's been in the league long enough now that I feel like it's just not going to happen. So I feel like that's one of those guys where you talk yourself into it, right? You get excited about the idea of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe he has a couple games to start his tenure where you're like, I can't believe we got this guy. What a godsend for us. And then he goes 15 games where you forget he's even on the team and doesn't do anything. And then you look at the cap sheet and you're like, wait, we're paying how much? And so I'd be pretty wary of that when I think about the Canucks.
What about Morgan Geeky, also from Boston?
Yeah, I like Geeky.
As a center?
I mean, anyone can play center. If you just put them,
it's a mindset, really, more than anything else.
Put your depth chart that way in the lineup. I like his skill, and certainly he has stretches where he also doesn't do as much as you'd hope for based on how talented he is, but I thought he was much better last year. And I still feel like just because of, I guess, he's been around for shorter, there's the idea, at least you could sell yourself on, that he still has more room to grow, I think, than a Zacha for comparison.
Sure.
So I'd prefer Geeky to Zacha out of the two Bruins options, but I still think McCann is probably the top of this list. But as you guys said, that's probably a pipe dream because I imagine the Kraken wouldn't be in a rush to sell him at this point.
Well, and it just feels like if they put him on the market, McCann, there's going to be a stampede of teams that are desperate to move their first-round pick and acquire
especially
him.
Especially because he's under contract for a couple more years, at least, at a really reasonable number based on what we're seeing with the market right now. And so that would not necessarily even just be like a short-term one, but one that you could benefit from for a couple years.
Kotkaniemi.
I don't see it. I think he can return the number he's on, especially with the cap going up and his age, but he just is not going to be able to contribute or move the needle at all offensively. And so for the Canucks at this point, if you're viewing that as your big ad that's going to give you another playmaker or another line that can drive the bus offensively, I don't think that's what you're going to be getting from him. And so I feel like people would wind up being disappointed based on the returns, considering the name and the contract and all the trade hype. I just don't really see it from Kotkaniemi at this point.
By the way, are we done with the letter and listen center?
Jack Quinn?
Yeah, Jack Quinn. Not a massive deal necessarily, but Jack Quinn, young RFA forward with the Sabres, signs a two-year deal. Mm-hmm. 3.375 AAV.
If you don't like him enough to go long-term, and I understand that he's got a big risk profile, trade him and re-roll. Especially if you're a team like the Sabres that isn't close to contending. Trade him to someone who's willing to go long term and re-roll, or trade him to someone who's closer and willing to actually like can actually bridge him and get the benefit of it. The path now is either like, oh yay, we managed the risk on a 22-year-old who's really good but has been injury prone, whereas like if you just did a long term deal and structured it the right way, you know, you have two looks at him while he's still eligible for a 1/3 buyout.
Yep,
this is a terrible mistake.
Yeah, especially if you're the Sabres with their cap space, you'd think like these are the types of players that you want to take that bet on, because if it does hit, it's going to pay off in a big way, and if it doesn't, you'll be able to get out of it, especially over the next couple of years while they do have this financial real estate. And so I'm skeptical, because I really didn't love his game last year, but I mean, he's had pretty significant injuries, and so I feel like you could at least talk yourself into, all right, he's working his way back into form, and he's still clearly a very talented player at this age. So I would have liked to see them go longer term.
What did you think, while we're on Buffalo here, what did you think of the return they got for the J.J. Paterka deal?
I thought in a vacuum it was fine, because as we've spoken about at length on your show throughout the year, in all our coverage of the Utah Hockey Club, the Utah Mammoth, Michael Kessering is an awesome player. Like, yeah. I think he's going to be a very clear top four defenseman. He makes $1.4 million this year. He's massive. He moves incredibly well. He's got a ton of like offensive swagger to his game as well. When they had those injuries, when Marino was out, he was playing top pair minutes essentially with Sergachev, and they crushed it in that time. So I know there's this kind of cautionary track record of these defensemen who play sort of down the lineup and look like they have skills. I think of like a Colin Miller example, guys like that over the years, where it's like their underlying numbers are awesome, and you put them into a bigger role and they really struggle, and you wind up kind of learning that the hard way. I don't think that's going to happen with him. We've already seen more than enough from him there. He's going to play with, I imagine, Erasmus Dahlin on the top pair, and that's exactly what they were looking for. I think Josh Doan already crushed it in a third line role for Utah, and he scored enough at the AHL level where I think he might have even a bit more to his game at this point. So I like those players for Buffalo. I think within the context, though, of everything they've done over the past couple years, my concern that lingers is it was such a financially motivated move for them, where they didn't really want to pay Paterka what he wound up getting, whatever, the 7.7 over 5 years from Utah. And instead they get these two guys who are much more cost controlled and cheaper, even though they do have the room to pay whatever they want for a Paterka. And so they get good players who are going to help them, but they wind up giving up clearly the higher reward, or I guess higher ceiling guy, and save money. And now they have all this cap space, and I'm very skeptical they're actually going to utilize it and spend it to improve their team. And so it's kind of the same conversation we keep having with Pegula and the Sabres for the past couple of years.
And now with Jack Quinn signed, they at least temporarily take care of one of their RFA situations. Of course, the other high-profile one they have is Bowen Byram. And Byram, we just continue to hear his name connected to the Canucks, even though it doesn't make a ton of sense from a purely hockey fit, at least in the near term. I guess it depends what happens with Quinn Hughes going forward. But Drantz and I were talking, and I was a little surprised to hear Drantz suggest just how far Byram's value has fallen around the NHL. How do you view the player, and how should teams be viewing? Like, what kind of bet should teams be willing to place on Bowen Byram at this stage of his career?
I think it's a risky one, because you look at the profile, especially from last year, and he plays a ton of minutes. He puts up the counting stats, right? I think he's like 30th or 35th amongst defensemen in scoring. And so you look at that on paper and you think, all right, well, this is a player who is going to command a big salary and is probably going to get it from someone. Yet you look a little bit under the hood, and his splits with and without Rasmus Dahlin in their 5-on-5 minutes are highly alarming. They were awesome when they were together. Everyone's awesome when they play with Dahlin. When he was away from them, they were getting crushed defensively. And so you factor in, obviously, the the health concerns that are still there. He had a fully healthy season last year, but he's had a bunch of head injuries in the past. And I guess this is true for pretty much everyone, where you're one bad hit away from having your career significantly altered at the NHL level. But for him, it feels like that's especially true. And so I think there's a bunch of red flags, yet given the age, given the skill set, with what we see in today's NHL, where those guys are so valuable, I think someone's going to talk themselves into it. I'm not sure if his value around the league has necessarily fallen, or if other organizations kind of smell blood in the water with the Sabres, where there's a couple deals now, the Paterka one, I think the Cousins one they made previously, the deadline, where I think there's probably teams around the league looking at them and being like, hey, we can probably lowball them and try to take advantage and maybe get him for 50, 75 cents of the dollar as opposed to what we think he's actually worth.
Yeah, and I think from once you get into that perspective and the 50 to 75 cents on the dollar thing, I do think it makes sense from a Canucks perspective. It's like, okay, if the cost is low, we'll make the fit work, or we'll figure it out down the road, right? But
especially with how starved they've been for any other defenseman other than Quinn Hughes, essentially, who can move the puck, get the puck to their forwards, make plays offensively. And so I think he'd certainly fill a massive need there. So I'd be intrigued if it came at a discount.
Yes.
But in terms of paying full freight or even paying a premium to acquire him and then extend him, that's where I'd get into kind of a little bit of hesitation for myself.
My formulation was, I wondered if he might be like closer to the Trevor Zegras sort of continuum than the side of the continuum than the JJ Paterka side, relative to, of course, the defender. The fact that he's still a defender as opposed to just a winger.
Sure, but for the Flyers, at least they get the 1 year of Zegras to
totally
kind of try it out before they have to make a
big decision.
As opposed
to the arbitration eligible angle.
Right now, or going with a short one and then figuring it out after. So I think that's where there's a bit more risk baked into the acquisition of Byron, whereas Zegras was kind of just like a one-year audition and then see where you go from there.
You cannot acquire Byron and go short.
Yeah.
Like, no, you're only trading for him if you want to sign him long term. 100%. If you're like, we're making this bet, we believe we want to do the gamble right now. That's the only way it makes sense.
100%. I even think they should do it on Zegras, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah. He's eligible for an extension on July 1st.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, why wouldn't you try and go like four times, I don't know, six and a half? Like, I'd be bringing him the Garland comp and being like, Garland.
Sure.
That's you now.
You're now Connor Garland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I honestly think that Philadelphia should be doing that. Now they're probably thinking they need him motivated so that he can improve defensively enough to be a hit for them. And they'll worry about the cap consequences down the line since they're going to have $30 million in space. And I guess I have some time for that. But, you know, everyone should go early. Like, everyone who's extension eligible, who a team wants to keep, should be signed on July 1. The fact that the Canucks are closing in with both Garland and Demko is honestly, like, the best thing that we've seen from this front office since their heater that built the 2023-2024 team kind of diminished. What was the break glass moment? When did they stop hitting every move out of the park? Was it the Pod Colson trade? The Danton Heinen signing? No, the Desharnais signing.
The Desharnais, yes. I was going to say.
Yeah, the Desharnais signing was the day that the hot streak ended, right?
Yeah.
I agree.
Need to get back on a roll here.
Yeah. Who knew that signing would be so consequential in the grand scheme?
It really was.
The other big deal that went down in the NHL today, Noah Dobson goes from the Islanders to Montreal, signs a big long-term extension there as well with Montreal. Obviously, all the talk on Dobson is the major down season he had with the Islanders. What do you make of the acquisition, the cost paid, and the bet on the extension for the Canadiens?
Yeah, I think it made a lot of sense for the Canadiens. You look at the $9.5 million AAV, and I think by year three or four of that deal, it's essentially going to be the equivalent of like a $7 million deal under the cap environment that we become accustomed to before it started spiking this offseason. I'm very curious to see what they do with their D pairs, right? Because I really liked what I saw from Hudson playing with Caden Gooley last year, both guys playing together as left shot defensemen. They bring in Dobson as a righty, whether they just load those two guys up situationally for offensive minutes or whether they split them up and try to carry their own pairs. Because you look at the splits for the Habs last year when they made that kind of spirited playoff push and wound up making it in and facing the Caps in round one, post Four Nations, when they got hot, they were relying so much on the Suzuki line and Hudson essentially just playing together and crushing the competition and then just holding on for dear life in every other situation. And so getting a secondary driver like a Dobson who could potentially float his own pair, get the puck quickly to their forwards because we know they want to play fast north-south hockey under Marty St. Louis. I think that makes a lot of sense. I thought it was a pretty reasonable price to pay considering some of the comps we've seen to deals like this in the past. You think of what the Blackhawks paid for Seth Jones. They acquired him a couple summers ago from the Blue Jackets, and that was a much steeper price at that point in time. So I really liked it from the Habs' perspective. I get the concerns about his foot speed, some of his defensive ability in terms of backtracking and contesting at the blue line. I get all of that, but what he's going to have to do for the Habs, and especially maybe on a second pair, I think he's going to crush it. He's going to fit a clear need for them, and this is a really tough, as we've seen, player type to get your hands on, right? A 26-year-old right-shot defenseman who's put up the points that he has in the past and clearly has so much puck-moving ability. So to land him is awesome, and I think that's why I also came in here a bit more sour on the Blue Jackets, because by all reports,
they were really
at the finish line, and he would have fit such an obvious need for them to play with potentially either with Werenski or Matejchuk as their two left shot guys. And it sounds like they actually had maybe even a better offer than the Habs had, but maybe because of the trading within division thing, the Islanders were asking more from them. They decided it was too steep for them, and so they lost out on that and pivoted to Charlie Coyle and Miles Wood. And so I think within the context
very
of that
similar
day,
deal.
I really, really dislike what the Blue Jackets have done the past 4 hours.
Really quickly, I want to do a draft of drafts.
Ooh, okay.
Okay. We're going to draft classes, lightning round style. Two rounds.
We're going to draft classes.
Yeah. Best NHL draft classes of the last 20 years.
Okay, so we're past 2023.
I feel like this is one we should have prepped for.
Yeah. Like, come on. This is outrageous.
You can do it fast. I believe in you. You know what the good ones are. Ready? You can go first.
2015.
Okay. That's a weird one.
Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel at the top? Yeah, oh, that's a weird one.
That's a weird pick.
What are you talking about?
Tim, you want to go second or third?
I'll go third.
Okay, I'm going to take...
Considering I don't know any of the draft classes.
I'm going to take 2013.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
That's the McKinnon-Barkov draft class. Bo Horvat, top 10.
Sure.
Nichushkin.
Clearly inferior to my pick, but anyways. No. All right, Tim. We're only going one round in this, by the way.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go... You know what? 2014, really.
Yeah, 2014. Wow. That's a good pick.
What a run.
That's a winner. That's
Ekblad,
a winning pick.
Reinhardt, Draisaitl, Conn Smythe, Canadian hero, Sam Bennett.
Yep.
It's a good one.
Don't look at Michael Dalcol and Jake Virtanen, but Willie Nylander, Ehlers, Fiala, Larkin, Pasternak. I mean, yeah, that was
pretty
loaded.
That's a stacked draft class.
Anyways, I
good
win
job.
That one.
You also get Brandon Montour in the second round.
And your guy, Ivan Barbashev, third overall.
Warren Fogle. You get Braden Point in round three, baby. Demko.
That's a good one.
Devon Taves in round four. Damn.
Yeah, Sorokin.
You might have won.
All right. By the way, just before we get out of here, Frank Saravelli tweeting, Canucks recently made another run at bringing back pending UFA forward Brock Besser. And then I love this in a separate paragraph. Besser will be going to market on July 1st. So they made a run and Besser said, bye. I'm going to see what's out there on the market.
Yeah, I think from both sides' point of view, there hasn't been a lot of optimism about a deal getting done for a while.
Yeah, and it sounds like that's not quite official, but we should all expect it to be official on July 1st next week. Dim, thanks for doing this, man. Enjoy the draft tonight. Hopefully we get some more fireworks. Everyone enjoy the draft. Make sure you tune in right here on Sportsnet 650. Of course, you can watch it on Sportsnet TV as well. We'll also have live coverage of rounds 2 through 7 tomorrow morning on the station, so you can listen to all of that here. We'll see when the Canucks end up making their first selection of the draft. And Drance and I will be back to break it all down on Monday on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.